Welcome, everyone. Good evening. Call to order the regular board meeting of SCV Water Board of Directors, September 20th, 2022. We will start off with Pledge of Allegiance, and I would like Mr. Peterson to lead us in a pledge. Please stand, place your right hand over your heart. Mr. Peterson.
Please follow me. Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. Before we start, we have to go through our announcements. So this meeting is being conducted in person at the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant boardroom as a convenience to the public. Members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the board using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raise hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. For public present in our boardroom, there are public comment cards on the table outside. Please complete and return them to the board secretary to help expedite public comments. The procedure for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I'll ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from board members. Once concluded, I'll ask for a motion and a second. After any further discussion, the board secretary will call for roll call votes. This time, most directors are present for tonight's meeting, except President Martin, who is attending the KHDS in partnership with Office of Congressman Mike Garcia's Washington, D.C. trip with our Assistant General Manager, Steve Cole. And I've been told that Director Goodside is on her way. Okay. At this point, we'll move on to our public comments. And we do have a comment from Cam Noltermeyer. Ms. Noltermeyer, would you like to come up and say your comment, please?
Cam Noltermeyer, actually. Bringing to your attention something done by Jerry Gladbeck. And he set this up a long time ago to have an election. And that is coming up. And somebody's staying there. Yes, he did. And that will be coming up shortly. You will have a very short time if you don't start trying to find out what you're going to do about this. But I will be following through on this, and I'm ready to take it to any length because I feel it's very, very important for this community to be able to vote on the members that are representing them with their water issues, of all things. It's the most important thing right now for everyone. And I'm just telling you that in advance, and it will be coming up, like I said, very shortly. And I only have seen one person that actually has filed something for that meeting. So take it for what you want. If you want a big fight, you'll have a big fight. But I think this is very important. He felt it was very important. That's why he did it through LAFCO, because everything that was done before that was just done any way you wanted. And I hope I'm making myself clear on that. And we can go the hard way, or we can go and have the election. If you're afraid to have an election, I have to wonder why. Because you will have a right to run, you will have a right to be elected, and you will have a right to represent this community. That's the way it should be. Right now, you don't have anything. You're just a bunch that got together and said, we're the water company. Now, that's the reason I'm bringing it out now. I want to make it very clear where I stand, because I know if he was alive today, he would be doing the very same thing. And I think at least we owe him that right. I have a lot of paperwork on this. You have it here too. And I hope we won't have a major fight about this. But it can go on peacefully. If you're afraid of an election, I have to wonder very greatly, why? Why are you afraid to let the people vote and actually have a say in their own water company?
Thank you, Ms. Meltwater, for your public comment.
That has a comment now are the developers.
Ms. Noltmeyer, thank you for your public comment. That does conclude your public comment.
Thank you, Ms. Noltmeyer. George Gawley.
Just to help out, if anyone in the public is listening and wants to know what the facts are, the filing period for the re-election on November 8th has closed. There are 8 candidates running in 3 divisions. Every division has a challenger. The election will happen. It's run by the County of Los Angeles and not by this agency.
Thank you, Dr. Colley. Thank you, Ms. Noltemeyer. Vice President Jerry Gladbach had many accomplishments for the agency and for California in terms of water. And I do appreciate you bringing that up at committee meetings and board meetings. You know, he will be missed. Thank you. Mr. Stone.
Yeah, I appreciate Director Colley clarifying the current condition that there are, in fact, individuals in this very room who have filed, and there are others in the community who have filed, and that's a good indication that there's robust interest from the community in participating in the board for this agency. Just a little history on the formation of SCV Water. It was a combined legislated and LAFCO process, and so the legislation included the provision for elections, the first of which was held in 2020. So a number of people sitting around this dais today were elected in 2020 or reelected. And so we have had an elected process starting in 2020. And the 2022 election will actually complete a full 4-year cycle for the new agency. And there's I don't know how to characterize what I heard other than it sounds like gaslighting to say that the agency is afraid of elections. I think elections are part of our democratic process in this country. We all value them. And this agency has done nothing to that I've seen to derail the 2022 election in November. I believe that will go on and there will be people selected for seats based on the preference of the voters. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. Madam Secretary, any other public comments, questions?
There is not.
Okay, so we move on to item number 4. But before we do, we'd just like to let the public know that Director Goodside is here and present. And I was just been informed that Director Planbeck is on her way.
Right, well, Vice President Nosorowski, I'm assuming that she's going to be here because she did not let us know that she wouldn't be. I just wanted the public to know that we are still missing her, but she should be. We do anticipate she will be coming.
Understood. Thank you for clarifying that. All right, let me move to item 4, approval of the agenda. Are there any changes, additions, and modifications to the agenda from directors? Seeing none, are there any public questions, comments?
There is not.
Okay, so the agenda is approved. So now we move on to item number five, special procedures. So we'll be presented by board secretary, and we will administer a ceremonial oath of office to Director Peterson. Before we do that, are there any questions or comments from the public?
There is not.
Okay. Board Secretary, please proceed.
Director Peterson, will you please stand? Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I state your name.
I, Kenneth Peterson.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
Or affirm.
Or affirm.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Support.
That I will
defend the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
And the Constitution of California.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance.
I will bear true faith and allegiance.
To the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of California.
The Constitution of the State of California.
That I take this obligation freely.
I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation.
Or
purpose of evasion,
purpose of evasion.
And that I will well and faithfully,
well and faithfully
discharge the duties upon which I'm about to enter.
I will discharge the duties upon which I am about to enter.
Perfect. Congratulations, Director Peterson. Please take your seat.
Congratulations, Dr. Pearson. Welcome to dais. How does it feel to sit on this side of the dais?
It feels honored to do this with these honorable board directors. Some of them I've known for a long time here, like Director Colley and Director Cooper. And I appreciate the newer members and also Director Kelly. Also, and Maria, we all go back a long way. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Welcome to the board. Thank you, Board Secretary. We move on to item six, approval of the consent calendar. There are two items on the consent calendar. Before we open up for discussions, any public comments?
There is not.
Okay. Discussions, comments from. From directors.
I move adoption of the consent calendar.
Is there a second? Okay. All right, second by Bill Cooper. April, please call the vote.
Just to verify, that was Director Gutzeit that motioned?
Correct.
Yeah, thank you. As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Colley.
Yes.
Director Ford.
Yes.
Director Kelly.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Abstain.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Gutzeit.
Yes.
Vice President Ozerhofsky.
Yes.
This item does pass. Thank you.
Thank you, directors. We move on to item seven, action items for approval. We have only one right now, item 7.1. This will be presented by Brent Payne. In summary, authorize the general manager to execute a contract with TriPoint Homes Holdings Incorporated for SCV Water's fair share costs for the construction of a 2.08 million gallon pre-stressed concrete tank for the end zone, including construction quality assurance and control testing, construction inspection, and engineering services during construction. Before we start, Mr. Stone, do you have any initial introductions or comments?
No, that's fine. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Payne, go ahead.
Good evening, directors. It's good to be with you virtually this evening. I'm Brent Payne, principal engineer here at SCV Water. And the purpose of my presentation this evening is to seek your authorization for SCV Water's fair share of the cost to build a new concrete tank for the Dean Zone in conjunction with the developer of the Skyline Ranch development. Next slide, please, April. This map you've seen before, it shows the limits of the Dean Zone on the east side of our valley. Green is the green color is existing Dean Zone. We have 2 1 million gallon tanks that are near the COC Canyon Country Campus. The orange color on the left shows an expansion of the Dean Zone that's west of Sierra Highway that'll serve the New Skyline Ranch development. Our existing Dean Zone has a storage deficiency of about 4.2 million gallons, and this was determined back in 2013 based on a water master plan that was prepared for the Santa Clarita Water Division at that time. The new Skyline development will add another 870,000 gallons to the deficiency, which will take us up to about 5.1 million gallons for a total deficiency in this zone. Our plan to make up this deficit is to build three new tanks in the Dean Zone over the next few years. We'll build two tanks at a new tank site that's being provided by the developer for Skyline Ranch. And then we'll build a third tank at our existing tank site near the COC campus in conjunction with the Sand Canyon Plaza developer, and Orlando's leading that one. These new tanks, I'd like to add, will meet one of our strategic goals, SCB Water's strategic goals, to build new storage to sustain water service during emergencies such as brush fires. Next slide, please. This shows the layout of the new tank site at Skyline Ranch. The developer is giving us extra space at this site so we can build a second tank as a future CIP project. We look forward to that. The developer will take the lead in constructing the first tank since they need their storage share, which is that 870,000 gallons, to support their build-out plans. We're going to upsize this first tank by about 1.2 million gallons, which will make a total tank size of 2.08 million gallons size, and that'll help us make up our existing storage deficiency. Our fair share is based on the proportion of the tank volume. The site also includes a pump station and a disinfection facility. Those are shown in the upper left on this map. The pump and disinfection facilities, as well as the land and the graded pad and the electrical supply, are all funded entirely by the developer based on the needs of the new Skyline Ranch development. Also, as you can see in the lower left-hand corner from the aerial, the tank site is close to homes. And this is one of the reasons that we're building a pre-stressed concrete tank at this site, is to avoid the risks that are associated with blasting and coating for a welded steel tank. And of course, another important reason is that the concrete tank offers a significant cost savings, life cycle cost saving compared to steel, when you compare the long-term maintenance cost, since the concrete tank doesn't need to be recoated every 15 to 20 years. Next slide, please, April. So this slide, we take a deeper dive into how the developer's portion of the storage requirement was calculated. Our storage tanks are sized to include storage for fighting fires, as well as emergencies and operational flexibility. The emergency and operational storage are based on maximum daily demands for the new development. Fire storage is based on LA County Fire Department flow requirements. We typically prepare a planning study for new developments that estimates the average and daily demand based on water duty factors and the proposed build out, and then a maximum day demand factor, maximum day demands based on a peaking factor from average day to max day. The table that's shown here is taken directly from the planning study that was prepared for the Skyline development. In this case, the maximum day demand for the new development for the Dean Zone portion of that development is estimated to be about 464 gallons a minute, which is about 2/3 of 1 million gallons a day. And this maximum daily demand was used to calculate the new storage requirement that's for operations and emergencies associated with the Skyline Ranch development. Our existing Dean storage is sufficient to meet the zone's fire flow requirements. Next slide, please. So the developer will take the lead in constructing the tank under the terms and conditions of a master agreement that BBK helped us to develop. And I've highlighted some key terms from the agreement in this slide. The developer's responsibilities, some of them are the agreement. It clearly states the items that are solely the developer's responsibility, like the graded pad and the electrical supply and some of those other items that I mentioned. The developer must furnish bonds for the total cost of the tank project. The developer is taking the lead in bidding the project, hiring and managing the construction contractor, as well as the construction quality assurance testing. They will pay prevailing wage, and they'll follow our standard protocol for documenting compliance with the Department of Industrial Relations relative to prevailing wage. Change orders will follow our SCB water purchasing policy. And then some key responsibilities by SCB Water will include, of course, we're going to inspect the construction to confirm that it is built according to SCB Water standards, as well as the approved plans and specs. We'll also take the lead in permitting with the DDW and final disinfection testing and acceptance. Next slide, please, Draco. The developer conducted a public bid for the project. They received 5 bids. We reviewed these bids along with the developer and recommend award to Pacific Hydrotech as the lowest responsible bidder. Pacific Hydrotech is well qualified. We worked with them before. They built 5 pre-stressed concrete tanks in the last 5 years, including a 3.7 million gallon tank at IRWD. They will use DN Tank as a subcontractor for the specialty pre-stressing of the rebar, which is what gives the concrete tank its enhanced structural integrity. We also had Canon Design Engineer prepare an engineer's estimate that we could use to compare with the bids to check the reasonableness. Their estimate was $6.09 million, which compares favorably to Pacific Hydrotech's bid. And if, I might add that if you exclude the sole source items for the pad and the grading, then Pacific Hydrotech's net bid, sort of an apples to apples comparison, was $5.36 million, which is about 12% lower actually than Canon's estimate. Next slide, please. So here's pricing for the construction support services. Construction quality assurance testing is needed to verify that materials and workmanship conform to the design specifications. And these services include compaction and concrete strength, welding. They're typically outsourced to companies that have specialized staff and testing facilities that we don't maintain in-house. In this case, the developers selected LGC Valley, which we know and they're well qualified. Their budget, we budgeted based on their proposal, $115,000. We plan to perform inspections using our SCB water inspectors, which will provide us cost savings. However, since this project construction will last probably 12 to 14 months, we're budgeting so that if we need to hire an outside third-party inspector, then we have that option. So we've assumed 8% of the construction cost, which is the $429,000. And then Canon, the design engineer of record, will provide technical support during construction. Their costs are based on a proposal not to exceed $82,000. And I might add that all these costs will be cost shared with the developer based on our fair share. Next slide, please. This table is a summary and breakdown of the cost as shared with the developer. The developer will pay 41.8% of the costs. SCB Water will pay 58.2% of the cost. That's based on that prorated storage volumes. Pacific Hydrotech's base cost, as I mentioned, for the tank and associated facilities that were cost sharing is the $5.367 million. And that excludes that $728,000 for the graded pad and the paving, the slopes, and the other items that are provided solely by the developer. So when you apply the percentage across the board, our share turns out to be $3.48 million. We've budgeted $3.5 million in this fiscal year. But I want to point out, based on the schedule, that since this is about a 14-month construction, 12 to 14 months, we will likely not spend all of this budget this fiscal year, and we'll need to include some money in next year's budget to complete construction and close out the project. Next slide, please. So just a brief mention about schedule. We are seeking your approval of the contract for our fair share at this time. Once approved, the developer will finalize the contract and issue the notice to proceed to Pacific Hydrotech. And construction is expected to be completed by November of 2023. Next slide, please. So this is the final slide, and the Engineering and Operations Committee recommends that the Board of Directors authorize the general manager to execute a contract with Tri Point Homes Holdings, Inc. for SCB Water's fair share cost in the not to exceed amount of $3,488,546 for the construction of a 2.08 million gallon MG pre-stressed concrete tank for the Dean Zone at Skyline Ranch, including quality assurance, construction quality assurance and control testing, construction inspections, and engineering services during construction. And that concludes my presentation. Back to you, Vice President Oskentowski.
Thank you, Mr. Payne. April, are there any public comments?
There is not.
Thank you. I'll open up this for discussions and motions by directors. Any questions or comments from directors? Director Planback.
This was presented at the engineering committee, and we had the same excellent presentation there, but I have questions always about the percentages. And I know the percentages of our share versus their share are based on a, I guess, a 2015 facilities capacity needs report or something. And this continues to concern me. Since this was, that report was approved before this agency ever existed, I'm wondering if we couldn't have a presentation about how those calculations were made, because it continues to concern me that the agency and ratepayers are paying such a large amount of these. And I see where they add, the engineer added in the calculations, and I appreciate you doing that, but I still have concerns. I don't completely understand it, and I think probably other board members don't understand it either.
Thank you, Director Planback. Mr. Payne or Mr. Mayo, would you like to address that?
So we can certainly provide or prepare a presentation based on the 2013 Water Master Plan, if you like. It was developed based on, but there's quite a bit of detail in there about how the water duty factors were estimated and how the, what the existing build out was based on billing records and land use. So it was a comprehensive master plan at that time. We are getting ready to do a new master plan, as you know, just now in the throes of it. So there will be an update that'll give us a new baseline. But we're certainly happy to provide a presentation on the 2013 if you like.
And I would like to add to that that we did provide that at your request as well. So we did give you a copy of the 2013 study, and then we also included this in here. So I'm sorry if you didn't get it, but we did send that out to the committee to make sure that we had you had a current record of it, and then we can go on to explain it if you would like to, or if you would like to have that discussion one-on-one, we can do that. If there is more interest from the rest of the board, then we can certainly make it a presentation. But as Brent pointed out, that information will be outdated in about a year when we complete the new master plan.
Director Planbeck, can you please turn on your mic?
Yeah, there's a lot of calculations that are based on this report. And I just, I apologize if my email didn't receive it. I didn't see it. And I do see that you have some calculations in here, Mr. Payne, and I very much appreciate that. But, it may be updated next year, but if there could just be some kind of a presentation. I mean, this is, the backbone pipeline went into Newhall Ranch at 23 million. A lot of tanks went over there with a high percentage of district paying the, a public share. And I just think it would be important, not only for myself, who wasn't on the board, I wasn't on Castaic Lake Water Agency at the time that was approved. Neither were several other board members. And also the general public might be interested to know why we are paying such a large percentage of taxpayer money, ratepayer money for these. And so I just think that would be helpful. And I don't think I'm the only one that would be interested in this. But Anyway.
Director Colley.
Director Planbeck, I'm trying to figure out your question. So is the question, why do we need the extra 1.2? Or is the question, how does the 1.2 compare to the 800,000, 900,000, whatever it is? And what's the fair ratio between those two numbers? I don't understand.
Okay. Well, I think it's multiple questions. It's, I guess, the need for the extra water is because the fire flow was underestimated or something like that in previous. That's the way it was, I understood it to be. And as a result of that, we pay 58% of this new tank. I mean, the public pays 58% of the new tank, and the developer pays a lesser amount. So I'm curious to know about how the fire flow got calculated. And then, because, I mean, this is multiple projects that we end up, the ratepayers end up paying a large percentage of it. So I'm concerned about that. And I don't completely understand it. Maybe Mr. Cooper will explain it.
So I was, at the time that study was done, I was chair of the retail committee. And I think a very concise explanation would be that when the Castaic Lake Water Agency acquired the retailer, it was the retailer, in the estimation of those folks that did that study, didn't provide sufficient storage. And so the study directed or suggested that new storage be provided. And so I think staff has said then, well, we'll upsize this tank by about 1.2. And assuming that 1.2 is not more than would be required for that particular zone, and it doesn't seem likely as we're still far short of that, what the study then suggested. So the proportionality of it makes sense to me. And the fact that the developer is actually contributing a little extra land, and presumably the wire is a little bit fatter going up the hill and those kinds of things. So developers putting a little bit more than their fair share. Although I would also note that the developer is also participating in the economies of scale. So one larger tank is certainly going to be cheaper than, you know, 2 1-million gallon tanks, or what would then be 4, I guess, if we ultimately. Anyway, I.
And then the same thing happened with Valencia Water Company.
I wasn't on any. I didn't.
Because of, you know, apparently there's a big shortage in the Valencia area as well.
Yeah, there's a variety of different reasons and different reports for each of those. And we will try to be as clear as possible in our reports and defining where that information come from. If it requires a summary of the 2013 report that details it, it has to do not only with fire flow, but increased water consumption in that area. Maybe zoning was not accurately reflected when they initially sized the tanks in that area. New zoning criteria, it could be the water use demand factors that were used in that. So there's a lot of different factors that are pretty clearly defined in that 2013 report as to why additional water would be needed. As Director Colley noted, we are not fully catching up. This is step one. Sand Canyon is step two. Even that does not fully catch up. In order to fully catch up to the amount that we have, we would need to build a additional 2 million gallon tank at this site as a future CIP. So even if the future master plan changes the allotment that we have and reduces the flow, it won't reduce it enough for us to be impacted. It just may prevent the future tank or reduce the size of the future tank. So it's still, from our perspective, a safe investment in getting the additional storage in this region based off of previous engineering studies and our experience.
Well, there's another concern. I mean, one of the reasons I want to understand this is that I think it would be a good idea not to have this happen in the future so that the public gets stuck with all this stuff. And I just think it's unfair that they keep getting, these are really pretty substantial amounts of money that they are ending up paying because somebody miscalculated the water. And it was this the developer that understated it to the county, and then we didn't size correctly? I mean, I and you know what? I'm really sorry I didn't receive the report, and I will now take this offline, and you and I can talk, and I will see what happened. I have problems with my email getting, if it was a large document, that might have been the problem.
Thank you, Director Planback. Director Cooper.
Yes, Director Planback. I think that would be very good if you took a look at the 2013 report. When they did the report on emergency storage, which is only 9 years ago, which isn't that long ago, they identified that storage, not just Santa Clarita, but Valencia, Newhall, the entire valley was looked at in how much emergency storage is there in case of an earthquake, whatever event that occurs. And it was determined that there wasn't enough storage. So what this is this is an opportunity in that we have a development going in there, and they needed 457 gallons a minute, an 860,000 gallon tank that they had to provide the property, and then they had to do the chlorine station and all of those. As it was an opportunity for us to get in there and increase our emergency storage at the same time, and was much cheaper because we're getting the land for free, we're getting other parts of this for free. So I agree. I'm looking forward to our next report on emergency storage down the road within the next year or so. But it was an excellent report. It was very well done and identified where we needed water. So here was an opportunity. We didn't have to build this. It goes back 50, 60 years of people build a few more houses here and a few more houses there. And that doesn't mean that developer had to build another tank. When that happens all around the valley, pretty soon you needed more emergency
aren't
storage.
Aren't we collecting connection fees that are supposed to cover that?
Well, this will come out of connection fees.
Portion of it. But what happened? Why weren't there enough connection fees collected before so that we aren't short on emergency storage?
Well, they are, but somebody builds two houses, you don't build something for emergency storage for two houses. Or somebody builds 20 houses, it's not like you're building another tank. You start getting a shortage, and then at some point, you have to add another tank somewhere in the system.
Right, but you've collected the connection fees for it. So right. Why isn't this coming out of connection fees? Why is it coming out of, looks like it's coming out of general funds or capital funds?
Well, capital funds are connection fees. And
aren't connection fees a different pot?
That's all developer fees. This is coming out of our capital program, which gets paid back by 1% money, I guess you could look at.
Yeah, but I don't understand why all the taxpayers are having to pay back for insufficient storage. I don't understand why it happened.
How it happened is you and I weren't here 50, 60 years ago.
The whole West Side got built out just in the last maybe 20 or 30, and yeah, most everybody was here.
And a lot of that has sufficient storage.
We were putting in all that backbone and the new tanks. We paid a large percentage of that because supposedly there wasn't sufficient storage.
The only alternative to this is say we've got a shortage and we're not going to make it up. And then you end up places like Yorba Linda that burnt down, and the entire water company was sued for not having sufficient fire flows. You have to bring yourself up to par with this. So I would suggest if they get you the report, take a good look at it. It was an excellent report. Mm-hmm. And I think you'd understand from there where it's at. It's just a shortage of emergency storage.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to clarify that the Valencia area emergency storage is a separate report and separate deficiency related to changing state standards on the amount of emergency storage we are required to have. The goal is 7 to 21 days of emergency storage, and we're not there. So that's a separate report, which we can also provide and go over in detail if you like. But that is why we are putting in the large diameter pipelines and regional reservoir on the 5-point project. It also is nice to spread that storage around to different parts of the valley. So if you do have an isolation where you're not able to move water from one side to the other, you have emergency storage in what was traditionally a regional system and now just part of our entire system. Mm-hmm. So there'll be future projects where we will be adding in some of that emergency storage into the reservoirs. In this case, it was the latter description that Director Cooper said, where through growth and capacity fees, ultimately, we had expansion of that system and need an additional storage. I'm not sure if that accounts for all of it or how that is done, but that's usually how you get growth over time. And then it's just a matter of us getting the available space, which is often our largest cost item. In this case, we were able to work with a developer and get that space for free. Mm-hmm. And then they get the benefit of the economy of scale. So it was a very good deal for us to try to jump on to cover this deficiency.
Okay, well, when they changed the requirements for storage, that the state changed it, did they give us grants or anything to increase the storage?
No.
I mean, they give us grants for other things.
We will apply for them. We will try to get money to cover that, but regional storage is definitely one of our program approaches to collecting additional money, but we'll do that with just about any project.
Mm-hmm. I think at one time
it's 3 acres.
Right.
You were expecting that. Now it's much larger. Thank you, Mr. Mayo. Thank you, Director Cooper. Director Planbeck, any further questions, comments? Are there any other discussions, comments from Director Brunstein?
Thank you. I have just a few technical, I guess, questions. My first question is, what kind of land rights do we have to the where the tanks are going to be? Are we going to be able to use them to rent out cell towers? Is it an easement?
We're going to get it in fee. We will own the land where the reservoirs are. As a general policy, that's the direction we're going to be moving, is anytime we have a facility on a piece of land, we're going to own all the rights to it.
Okay, awesome. And then my second question was, are we concerned about any seismic issues? Is it better to have a concrete versus metal? I mean,
both of them have seismic factors that are in consideration. There is a seismic standard that we are meeting for today. The difference would be the height of the reservoir. In a steel tank, you have a little more freeboard that is required. And so the tank height would be a little bit higher. Ultimately, both tanks will be able to accommodate seismic requirements.
Awesome. And then, kind of piggybacking off Director Planbeck, I'd love to, I guess this is one part that I'm still missing, is what once a development is announced or decided or approved, how do we deal with the water rights then? I mean, I know we get a water supply assessment, I get that part. But what does the developer have to bring to the table? What are their responsibilities water-wise versus what our responsibilities are water-wise? And I think that kind of ties into like the percentages and all that bit. I mean, if it's something that only I need to get, then that's totally fine. I'll have that conversation one-on-one. But that's kind of something that I'm kind of still missing in this equation.
Okay. And I will try to answer that as best I can. I may lean on Matt a little bit to help answer some of that. But ultimately, the development is responsible for they are entitled to the zoning. And we are the land use agencies that dictate the zoning for that area, and that being the county or the city, and how many homes could go in there. Then by that process, we look at the water supply assessment to see if we can provide water to that project, which we are obligated to do, either go and get additional water supplies or verify that our current water supplies can continue to provide that development. They are responsible for all facilities and infrastructure in order to build their development with no contribution from the agency. The only contribution occurs when there is requests from the agency to upsize a pipeline or upsize the reservoir or pump station to meet demands beyond the requirements of the development. But the development is always required to pay for 100% of their fair share. I hope that answers. I kind of combined two questions.
No, it did. Thank you. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. That's it for me for
now. Thank you, Director Brunstein. Director Goodside.
couple of follow-up questions. I mean, I appreciate the comments on the master planning process and how they evolve. I know Newhall went through at least one iteration there, and it actually resulted in, you know, much better results and a lot of efficiency. So I am looking forward to our comprehensive agency-wide master plan coming up. And I appreciate the comment about savings by piggybacking on these projects, because it doesn't make sense to build their tank and our tank just to keep it separate versus making one bigger one. On the concrete tank, do we have a lot of those? I actually don't remember hearing of them.
We don't have a lot of concrete tanks currently.
Do we have some?
We have a few, usually okay. The larger diameter. It used to be an economy item. Economically, it was usually much cheaper to build a 1 or 2 million gallon steel tank than to move to concrete. That is no longer the case. The price of steel, the availability of steel, even though you use steel rebar, but the steel panels for a steel tank are actually longer lead items and more expensive. And so the wash point now is much less. I think based off of the numbers we were looking at, it's in the 1.5 million gallon range that the concrete suddenly becomes more expensive. From a operational standpoint, long-term longevity, the concrete tank doesn't require recoating. So the life cost of the project has always been much cheaper to go with concrete. It also is just availability of concrete in the area that meets the certifications of DDW, NSF concrete. So that is available now. We've sourced that here locally. So we are able to build these in this region now.
Okay. Yeah. That, and that almost answered related questions. So lifespan on a concrete tank is comparable to steel or?
Yeah, the same.
Okay.
I mean, generally
the same. And then 50. You talked about the NSF certification on the concrete. Does that mean that it is is certified to not have any leachable components and therefore doesn't need a coating?
Correct.
Like steel? Okay. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Goodside. Are there any discussions, comments, or motions? Dr. Armitage.
Thank you. I just want to say thank you to Mr. Payne for the presentation and thank you to Mr. Mail for answering the questions. I don't have additional questions. I just wanted to also say thank you for specifying the or differentiating the responsibility of the developer and SCV Water nicely in this, in our packet and in the presentation so that we could understand that. And I appreciate you specifying that you're going to try to use the agency's inspectors instead of contracting that out if possible. So thank you for that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Armitage. Are there any discussions or motions?
I move adoption of this item, of the recommended action.
Motion by Director Goodside. Is there a second? Second by Director Cooper. April, please call the call.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Colley.
Yes.
Director Planbeck.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Ford.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Goodside.
Yes.
Director Kelly.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Vice President Ozahowski.
Yes.
Thank you. This item does pass.
Okay. Thank you, directors. Before we move on to item eight, there's some housekeeping items before we move on. For the record, all directors, aside from President Martin, are now in attendance. And we did receive a public comment on item not covered on the agenda that was included in your board packet from Mr. Brian Folsom, a former employee of our legacy water agency regarding adjusting the employer's contribution for CalPERS medical insurance for calendar year, medical coverage for out-of-state retirees. And I'm under the impression that's going to be discussed further on in October by the finance and administration committee meeting.
Absolutely correct. It is coming up next month in finance.
Okay. Thank you, Director Kelling. Okay. So moving on to item number 8, strategic plan status report, and this will be presented by General Manager Matt Stow.
Okay. Thank you very much, Vice President Ozahowski. I think we have a PowerPoint. Yes, we do.
We do.
No sweat. I'm going to do this from here just because I'm kind of more comfortable in this spot and I can see you all. This was a request, I believe, from Director Armitage, and I think it was a timely request for two reasons. One, we're pretty far into our strategic plan period here from when we started, and two, we would have an update likely starting next year. So I'm going to cover a little bit of that, and I will kind of give you some, go to the next slide here, the introduction slide. That's kind of where I am. That plan was developed in, the completion of the plan was in 2019. We actually, I think, started it in 2018, the first year of the combined agency. So we'll do kind of a quick review tonight and check in on status. It's not intended to be a plan editing or plan revising session, so please take notes. If you have triggers or thoughts, keep them, note them, and we will definitely have a process where they can be elicited and shared when we update the plan. It was an extensive process the last time. We had a facilitator who's both skilled in strategic planning and also had a background in the water industry as both a staff person. I think he started as a water quality diver chasing frogs in San Joaquin Reservoir and ended up as assistant general manager of Metropolitan Water District before he went off into the consulting world to follow his passion for improved organizations and operations. His name is Ed Means. That process included work with the board, with Ed having one-on-one interviews with board members, and then facilitating some open public board meetings to discuss some of the key themes and issues, the management team. And it really, I think Ed also provided some value there. He suggested we really should have a more engagement with our own staff. And we'd been sort of hearing that from the first cut at a strategic plan that Castaic Lake had done a couple years earlier, before the merger with Ed. And so we built that into the process as well. And I think we got a lot of additional value out of that. That also established for the new agency an updated vision and mission that's up here. We often have public commenters refer to it. So I think it was good to put it across the top there. And we can't add a single word, as you can see, without taking one out when we do update the plan. There were six major goals identified and then related strategies and objectives. And as I'll explain, I think it would be good to start on an update in the plan in 2023 for a couple of reasons. Let's go to the next slide. This is just a quick review of some of the high points. Our vision, exemplary water management for a high quality of life in the Santa Clarita Valley. Our mission, providing responsible water stewardship to ensure the Santa Clarita Valley has reliable supplies of high quality water at a reasonable cost. I don't think I skipped. This is double-sided, so I got to be careful. I don't mess myself up here. The six major goals. Next slide. I included this graphic, even though you can't read it, because it's a cool graphic. It nests those goals in kind of a honeycomb fashion. But they center around customer and community, infrastructure reliability, water supply and resource sustainability, water quality and environmental compliance, financial resiliency, and a high-performance team, focusing on our staff. And I would say that I think our team has exhibited their ongoing support for the plan and implementing the plan. And I think we'll see more about that tonight. the other thing about plans is, of course, plans are great, and then life happens and there are unexpected events. And I was thinking back to from 2019, some of the unexpected events. Well, later that year, COVID-19, that obviously had profound effects on how we operated for a couple of years, and perhaps some beneficial effects, not all detrimental, and in terms of probably advancing our paperless processes and our remote work process and our flexible work, you know, capabilities. PFAS, always present now, and a key focus of the agency that, while covered under the water quality goal in the generic sense, is obviously a large effort that was not necessarily specifically known or identified to that degree. Supply chain challenges that have come in the wake of the pandemic and kind of restarting the world and a reordering of things that's still kind of shaking out, along with inflation that seems to be related to both supply chain and kind of an infusion of money globally to try to sustain the economy while people were not able to work, and then kind of the difficulty in recovering from zero interest and moving to higher interest. So there's a lot of things that are kind of at play there on the financial side that are really still playing out for the agency later in the plan cycle. Drought, we normally plan for drought, and we've managed to get through a number of droughts with relatively modest customer, you know, requests for curtailment or reduction in use. But one of the, I think, things to keep an eye on is we're seeing droughts that are beginning to exceed planning norms. And so definitely, I think in the next cycle, we need to pay some attention to what's our strategy to deal with that? You know, is it on the demand side? Is it on the supply side? Is it a little bit of both? And how do we approach that? And then new mandates, always present, and no doubt more on the way. I picked one that's just sort of was easy at mine because we just talked about it a little bit, and that was the electric fleet rules that will be coming and having impacts on the agency. Again, not a value judgment there, just that's another thing we have to deal with, and it impacts what kind of planning we need to do for infrastructure at our various facilities and our capability of providing 24/7 response and service in the field with what we'll be converting to an electric fleet over time. I'll just point out in your packet is the detailed status of the plan. And so you can, you know, you may have already gone through it, or at your leisure, you can go through. And this was a matrix that was developed when we did our first, I think, 1 year check-in on the plan. And we just brought this current with our best, contributions from various members of the management team and staff to try to capture current status on items in the plan. And what I'm going to do in the PowerPoint is just hit a few highlights of each goal. Otherwise, this would be a four-hour presentation. But this is, I think this is a good thing to run through. You know, there are some where this is the thing about planning. It's always what's present in mind. And I look back, and we certainly had that experience as staff going, well, what was that goal? What does that mean? You know, and somebody else said, no, I remember it was this, you know, and oh, yeah, we did that. Okay. And then others are real obvious, and yay, we got those done. Those were big things to get done. So going forward, you know, I think we would probably have this as a reference when we kind of restart a refresh process for the next 5 years. But we also will have all of those things that come to mind in the minds of each of our board members, each of our management team members, and each of our staff to try to identify what are the key operating strengths, weaknesses, threats, opportunities that we have, the classic SWOT analysis, along with just kind of that blue sky thinking of, well, what else are we missing? You know, what should we be really thinking about for the next 5 years? So highlights by goal, customer community, and I just had our management team kind of spend a session kind of coming up with this list. So there's no magic to it other than we did try to identify what we thought were significant items that have been completed. One was standardizing customer service procedures across our entire customer base. We had three different retailers when we started. A customer service policy was adopted in February 2020. I would just add to that, I think we did some additional work also on just consolidating, and I think that shows up later in another goal, consolidating the operations. And we've just now completed the migration to all one billing system. So all of those three are tremendous accomplishments, I think. Implementing an outreach plan aimed at our customers to educate them a little bit about SCV Water and what we're here to do, and our various resources and things that are available for them, as well as educating them about water in the community. Leading the development of the groundwater sustainability plan for the watershed, and that's kind of a new function of the new agency. That sort of coincided with the Groundwater Sustainability Planning Act we actually started that as separate JPA partners in the GSA, and we kind of completed the transition to a single agency during that time, and we still have our city and county partners in that process. But from a staffing standpoint, we staff that. We provide the staff and technical resources for that process. Goal B highlights infrastructure reliability. A couple of recycled water projects. I know it's perhaps the perception is it's frustratingly slow, but we have completed a couple of water quality projects and have more under construction or under design. One is the phase two recycled water backbone pipeline distribution system and tank. The other is we've initiated construction on the West Ranch recycled water project, phase 2D. Phase 2B, I believe, is the, I'm drawing a blank on the development. Vista Canyon, thank you. I knew it was like a visionary sounding name, Vista Canyon. These Earl Schmidt sludge collection system project that has been designed and the construction is in progress. Magic Mountain Pipeline, a number of segments of that pipeline have been completed, and those really coincided with the ability to complete that link on that side of the system was aligned with when the related development was creating the roadway to put the pipeline in. So rather than build it cross country and then risk having to be relocated at a later time, we tried to time that coincidentally with that. And then developing an emergency response plan for SCV Water. And again, doing that as a whole rather than as separate entities. Goal C, there we go, I almost skipped it. Focuses on water supply and resource sustainability. Obviously, a big one was our 2020 Urban Water Management Plan, which I believe was, this says June 2020, but I believe it was June 2021, if I'm not mistaken. I think we've gotten to where the state releases their criteria so late that everybody sort of gets a pass and turns in their homework, 6 months late, with the approval of the state that's okay, implementing a dry year recovery program. Now that's a little bit cryptic, but as you remember, we have stored water up in the Southern San Joaquin Valley. And one of those programs was to expand our recovery capability there in the Rosedale Rio Bravo system. And we did that in partnership with Irvine Ranch Water District, where we partnered on wells and had a grant that helped pay for a portion of that. And I think a number of you were able to attend the startup celebration for that facility. We also have executed a number, at least one, I think perhaps more than one, short-term exchange agreement with Irvine Ranch Water District in trying to continue that cooperative relationship in water management. with some of the assets and capabilities that they've invested in and our own, trying to find good matches there for mutually beneficial agreements. We completed our updated water conservation plan and ordinance process. Referring back to the GSA, we formed the GSA and completed the groundwater sustainability plan, the first iteration of the plan. That was a big process, and a lot of effort went into that process. Completed buyout of the solar power contracts. I will say, as an asterisk, we probably have some new strategic plan items, because it is the supply chain issue has really been a bit of a problem for that, in that, and I'm not sure whether Goldman Sachs operating it would have had much better luck. Perhaps they would with scale, but we've encountered some difficulty in sourcing repair parts at times, and we're working through trying to improve that. Obviously, we want that asset to be performing 100% of the time. So full disclosure there. I still think it was the right decision and the right move, but the supply chain issue has thrown a bit of a wrench into it the last year or so, off and on. Pursuing grant funding for recycled water infrastructure. We've had some successes with that and for other projects as well. And that's important in the overall financial context of the agency. Goal D highlights water quality and environmental compliance, sort of the day-to-day trying to meet all applicable water quality regulations. And I'll have a little more on that in the general manager's report tonight on the efforts that go into that. Completing the updated salt nutrient management plan and continuing to pursue responsible parties for financial responsibility for groundwater contamination. So as we were able to report publicly, we did receive a jury verdict on the Whitaker case, the second Whitaker case. That's now in the appellate process, but it looks to be in the order of about $65 to $68 million that we could potentially recover if we're successful in that next stage of the process. And that's certainly, again, a significant figure in the context of our overall capital needs. It's definitely important that we do that. We are also continuing to pursue the multi-district litigation from the manufacturers in the PFOA firefighting foam case that's out of the Southern District Court in the East. It's a consolidated national case, and we have representation and are one of the numerous plaintiffs in that case. So there's a potential recovery there, although at this point we're a ways off from knowing the outcome of that. Maintaining interagency water quality communication and collaborations, and evaluating improvements to our overall environmental compliance tools, including tracking software. And I believe that was a contribution from Director Gutzeit, her prior stint on the board, and having knowledge of some of the tools in that business. So it was good to have that suggestion and input. Goal E highlights financial resiliency. We updated our cost of service models and are now utilizing a long range financial plan and enterprise cost allocations. That's a mouthful, but essentially I think we finally got our arms around the unified budgeting, unified costs, and the interrelationship between rates, taxes, fees, revenue, and expenses. And we certainly have more that we are working on doing to perfect that and get it even better. But I think we've got a great foundation, and Rochelle will be continuing to kind of build that out to enable the agency and the board to understand the financial implications of its policies and decisions, which is key. We were able to develop a multi-year rate implementation plan to unify rates at the retail level. And provide for consistent levels of funding and cash reserves throughout the service area and developing an updated reserve policy. And then kind of on the back end operational side, we've really put a lot into combining, standardizing our warehouse and inventory practices, purchasing for a number of our items. I would say we're still not fully decentralized purchasing for every single thing that we do at the agency. And we're actively kind of evaluating where do you draw that point? At what point does the centralization become more costly than the having total control from one point and the benefits that can accrue? But that is a long way, it has come a long way, and kind of coincident with that, not so coincident, is there are staffing implications there too in terms of making sure that it's somebody's job and somebody has a dedicated time and scope of their effort to shepherd that process and be responsible for it. And that gets to, speaking of jobs and teams, our high performance team goal. And again, I want to take an opportunity to thank our team for the excellent work over the last 4 years almost on this plan and in supporting the plan. And as we head into the next update, I think they'll provide some really good on the ground experience-based insights too on what maybe areas we need to focus on in the next iteration. And I alluded to that. I knew it was here somewhere. We did, one of the things we were able to do was we kind of consolidate our customer field service offices, our customer service offices. And in concert with that, we kind of entered the remote pay field, which allows customers to go into quite a variety of local retail outlets and pay their bill. And we found, you know, I think one of our concerns there in consolidating was we didn't want to leave those customers who prefer to kind of come in and pay cash or pay by check at a counter for various reasons without that option. And we still have a front-facing customer service office, which does get some visitation. A lot of our bills are paid automatically or online. But another area that we've added is this remote payment. So people can go into CVS or a number of other stores and pay their bill. Completing an organizational design study, an updated class and comp study that was completed. And again, these things are always live. So, you know, as time goes by, you refresh them. But that was the first kind of unified one for all positions in the agency, and getting them all in a compatible description of classes, classifications, and then establishing appropriate pay levels was completed in October 2020. Further, even into the deep back end, our IT gurus have done a lot of projects. And I alluded to the pandemic and how that accelerated so much work. Consolidating our telecommunications and network equipment. While that has a completion date of 2021, I would say that, you know, the unplanned task there was probably as huge, which was how do you get more than 100 people able to work remotely, virtually overnight, and do so productively. And there were waves of improvement through that pandemic period. There was what we could do initially, and then there was, hey, we're rolling out some better stuff here. Your connectivity should work better. Let's work on security. stop working out of your home networks, you know, things like that. So there was a lot of good, I think, effort there as well. Couple of things I alluded to also just on the next slide, other significant accomplishments, not necessarily in the plan. We had to implement and develop a number of emergency health policies related to, and employment policies with leave related to Senate, various urgent Senate bills that were passed in the legislature, I would add governor executive orders and other related to public health orders from LA County related to COVID-19. And you know, frankly, that kind of consumed our safety department and a chunk of HR for a while. And I'm happy. I'm going to report on something else today that sort of is maybe the denouement of, I don't want to tempt fate, but, you know, if we're in the tail of the pandemic, maybe our safety department is starting to get engaged on things that we were wanting to do other than COVID-19. They're still working COVID-19, of course, but it's good to see that we're able to do some things. And I have a thing to share on that later in a GM report. The flexible workplace policy, the Finance Committee just got a report on 1 year of that last night, and I think it was favorably received, and we got some good input from the committee as well about perhaps where we could take that next, and we will take that under consideration, perhaps bring something back as well. While all this other fun stuff was going on, there was, again, probably could have been picked up in the strategic plan, but sometimes you miss something and it's there. And the 2018 AWIA, American Water Infrastructure Act, that essentially was a kind of a follow-on to some of the post 9/11 security planning and counterterrorism planning mandates for water systems. And so we completed an update of that through our safety and operations staff. But I can't tell you publicly everything we've done, but it was a good process to allow us to take a fresh look at where we should be focusing from a security standpoint at our facilities. We completed the agency's worksite safety plan and a draft cybersecurity plan. And again, that's another, probably could have been on that first slide about things we didn't, you know, fully understand that we're going to change or evolve in a much larger way. And certainly cybersecurity has become a much, much bigger issue than it was in 2019. And in our new plan, I'm sure we'll want to duly recognize that as one of our operational sub goals. I don't know if, yeah, we did have the PFAS. We had a slide, a picture for the PFAS. So I'll just end with PFAS. I started a little bit with PFAS, but happy to say this is the NWELS facility. The Valley Center facility is I think imminently to get its permit from DDW and be able to start up delivering water. It's operating now and but not discharging into the system yet while we await testing and the final permit. And of course we have another facility at Hanby in Santa Clara Wells that's will start construction very soon. And then a whole line of additional PFAS treatment facilities in the queue. Looking ahead and updating our strategic plan, my suggestion, and it's just a suggestion, would be that the timing to start would probably be summer of 2023, and that would allow us to finish it probably late 2023 if we have a longer process, you know, early 2024. But part of the reasoning is, and it was alluded to in the discussion of public comment tonight, we have an election coming up. We'll have whatever outcome of that election sitting at this table representing the community as our new board in January. It may be essentially this board. It may be a different board. But the thought was to allow that board to kind of get their feet under them for about 6 months before launching into that process. We have a budgeting process that we would be going through in, you know, February through May. And so the idea would be perhaps to start right after that. We don't want to wait too long because I think there are a number of changed issues and we should be starting that process. My suggestion would be that we look at a similar process with, you know, multi-level in the agency and a facilitator that can help pull all that together and identify common themes and help us develop a plan. Obviously, the board workshops would be noticed and open to the public as well, so we could get comment and input from the public as we're developing the plan. And I think we would be wise to revisit our goals, our strategies and objectives in light of, you know, what do we think we're facing for the next 5-year planning period. So that concludes my update.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. The presentation shown today was a revised PowerPoint. It was sent to all of you directors via email. It has been posted on the website and is at each of your spots. So with that, April, are there any public comments?
There is not.
Are there any questions, comments from directors? Director Armitage.
Thank you. Thank you, General Manager Stone, for this great presentation. And I very much appreciate agenda planning for including this in the meeting. I know we had a lighter agenda tonight, so it fit well. So I appreciate the time that was taken to prepare for this and for us to receive it. So, you know, I know we can all read through the strategic plan ourselves on our own time to understand the strategies, goals, and objectives. But I think it's really great to hear from you and understand the additional information on the progress that's been made over the years since 2019. And I really wish members of the public would hear this. It makes me sad that there's no members of the public sitting in this room. I know we have some joining remotely, so I'm glad to see that. I almost want to like promote the meeting recording, because this was such great information that I think the members of the public would appreciate knowing just how much work has been done, you know, over the last few years. By our staff. And I also want to say thank you to all the staff members for the incredible amount of work that has been done. And I'll close by saying I did read the details of this, of these spreadsheets that you shared with us. And I just will close by commenting that it's really nice to see that despite the big wrench that COVID threw in the midst of all of the work, and the affiliated supply chain issues, there isn't a single project that I saw that had a check mark in the deferred column, which I thought was incredible. So thank you.
Thank you, Director Armitage. Are there any questions, comments from directors? Director Plumbeck.
Yeah, I ditto Director Armitage's thanks, and thank you very much. It was really comprehensive. It's amazing to see what we've done. And what I appreciate is that COVID in some ways offered us opportunities to be more inclusive. And I think one of the really wonderful outcomes of COVID is these hybrid meetings. And so I appreciate the staff's hard work on that. I know it was, and the extra meetings, and Director Osikowski chairing the extra meetings. And I just think there's so many good things in this. It's really amazing.
Thank you, Director Plumbeck. Thank you, Mr. Stone. With no further discussions, we're going to move to item number 9, General Manager's Report on Activities, Projects, and Programs. Mr. Stone.
Okay, a rare twofer tonight. I just have a couple items, since I knew that was going to be a little lengthier presentation, but I do think they're timely. One is, I kind of alluded to, you know, our safety and emergency planning functions, you know, kind of getting on track. Not that they were too off track. We did complete an emergency plan and some of the aforementioned federal, you know, review of federally mandated review of our treatment plant security and that kind of thing. But it certainly, you know, consumed a lot of time. And one of the things that also suffered a little bit was, or at least the format for training, we were able to do in-person incident command system training today and tomorrow. We had about 15 key team members from across the organization who were able to dedicate those 2 days to this process. And we have a really interesting trainer who's retired fire department personnel, and has spent the last portion of his career doing this training for other fire departments across, I think across Southern California. The training focuses on the standardized incident management system process with an emphasis on how that process works in larger incidents, those with multiple jurisdictions or of a more complicated, longer duration. There are kind of basic level courses in that too that many of our staff have completed. And this is, I found this a great refresher. I think the last time I took one of these courses, the year had a couple of zeros in it. It was like 2006 maybe. So I found that I sort of remember it, but it's still been a long time since I've been able to sit in that process, and I really enjoyed it. Hopefully the staff didn't find it annoying to have the general manager there. I don't think so. We had a good time and we have more work to do tomorrow. We'll be developing our own incident plan on a you know, simulated event. The other thing I'll mention is, I think I would like to acknowledge some efforts that have been going on behind the scenes the last week or so with our treatment plant, water quality and operations personnel. And I'll kind of walk you through. And again, Captain PFAS gave me these notes. So, and I will try to do them faithfully. But, and Mike, I think, is listening if I really stumble. But you may recall the root fire, which started in late August on the 31st and went on for about a week before it was fully contained. The biggest day was the first, day or two. The fire burned quite a bit of land on the western flank of Castaic Lake. And we then experienced in early September on the 4th and I think on the 10th, two different rain events from that monsoonal post-hurricane flow that came up. And they were certainly welcome, but they were pretty intense in isolated areas. And that kind of combination can lead to more than usual runoff of material into the lake. The other complicating factor is the lake is still fairly low. It had been lowered last year, you may recall, to complete some scheduled repairs to the outlet tower. And with the very dry conditions, there really hasn't been a lot of spare water to refill much of the lake. It is up a bit from where it was at the lowest point. So you have a smaller body of water receiving potentially a slug of runoff with a lot of suspended material in it. And combination of these factors is thought to be the cause for an increase in turbidity that we've been seeing in our treatment plants. And so beginning the middle of last week, the treatment plant operations staff reported higher than normal turbidity levels from the influent water. So it had probably migrated down that arm of the lake to the tower at that point. And when I say higher than normal, the normal influent turbidity range has been 1 to 2, what they're called NTUs, and they're nephelometric turbidity units. And a nod to Ari, nephelo is a Greek word, which means cloud. And it is a measurement of light scattered when it's shown through a sample. So the clearer a sample is, the fewer of those units you have. And for the raw influent water, we were seeing NTUs in the range of 40 to 60 with a peak, one measurement as high as 79. I think Metropolitan at the top of the lower feeder had some measurements up in at that level as well. Of course, it has a longer run to their plants, which helps. Turbidity, it's a measure of cloudiness in the water from suspended matter. It indicates the overall effectiveness of your filtration. So influent turbidity is one thing. What we're graded on from a water quality standpoint is effluent turbidity. So the staff have the challenge of operating plants that normally see 1 to 2 NTUs at the front end and are required to produce, there's three different criteria, I'll get to those, a lower level than that at the outfluent end. And suddenly you have influent that's multiple times higher. These have continued during the week. They have trended down, and they seem to have stabilized a bit as they're trending down. There had been kind of, I think, probably temperature related up and downs, you know, with the diurnal temperatures on the water night and day causing some upwelling. Frankly, Ed Means would probably be a good resource as well as Director Cooper. You never had to manage anything like this, did you, Matt? Yeah. And that's exactly, I was going to get to that. What does that mean? What happens is the more suspended material you have in your water that you're trying to treat, the more frequently you're going to have to backflush your filters and your clarifiers as well. The clarifiers come ahead of the filter where you're trying to kind of settle out some of that material before it gets into the filters. So that's exactly what has happened. We've had to shorten the run on filters each time for far fewer hours than normal. And then you have to find a place to put the backwash water. So part of what that does is it reduces the ability of the plants to put out treated water. The actual capacity that you can get out as treated water that meets the standard drops as you go through that increase in frequency and backwashing. And so we had an operations challenge to make sure, are we going to be able to meet demands with less water coming out of the filter plants? Remember, we already have one arm kind of tied behind our back with wells being off with PFAS. In this case, our emergency storage was very helpful. We were able to lean on storage initially while we were getting our hands around this spike in turbidity and other strategies to manage it. We've been able to put some water back in storage the last few days. The other thing I alluded to is if you're backflushing your filters and your clarifiers more frequently, that water goes somewhere. We have these little basins behind the filters that we put that water in, and we let it settle out, and you dry that sludge, you send the settled water back through the plant. But we ran out of space there when we have these kind of events. So we have kind of an overflow strategy at Rio Vista, which is a kind of a natural basin depression that's fondly nicknamed Lake Sagehorn, after the former general manager. And that gets you into the world of MPDS and making sure that you can discharge water to that. And eventually when that fills up, you're putting backwash water into the creek. And so we have communicated with the regional board about that. They're aware of the emergency situation and have indicated they're okay with what we're doing. We're taking required samples and monitoring that. We also communicated with city and county staff so they'd be aware of why the flows were coming down the creek or coming down the wash there, that drainage that goes under Newhall Ranch Road and out to the creek there. So back to the drinking water side, I mentioned there are kind of three measurements of turbidity from a compliance standpoint. One is the instantaneous level that comes out of the plant before disinfection, and that is greater than 5 NTUs is a violation. We have had one exceedance of that at Earl Schmidt. Earl Schmidt actually has a feature built into it. After a similar event in 2011, it was suggested that be built into it by the DDW, and it automatically shuts down if it detects that. So that water essentially went into a large clear well with other treated water. It did not go directly out to the distribution system. We have communicated with DDW about this, and they've asked for some further information. We're still kind of an active communication. So we're not sure if we will actually get a violation for that parameter or not. Once we give them full information, it's their call on that. But we did shut the plant down briefly and then restart it. And we have not had an exceedance since that time. The other parameter is 1 hour turbidity levels, and 1 NTU is the threshold there. We have not had an issue yet meeting the 1 hour turbidity threshold. So that's been good so far. And then the longest term criteria is over a calendar month, you can have no more than, I believe in Mike's notes, this might be reversed, but I think he wrote it as 95%, more than 95% exceeding 0.2 NTUs, but I believe it's 95% would be less than 0.2 NTUs, and no more than 5% can exceed the 0.2 NTUs. We have not exceeded this yet because we're still in the calendar month where the event started. So one of the things that our staff are really working hard on is projecting out, you know, are we going to be able to make that? Are we going to meet that criteria at both plants? And fingers crossed, we haven't had enough incidents to already hit the 5% level. If you assume the whole month of samples it will take. So we're just trying to minimize any more that go over the 0.2 to try to stay under that level. There are other tools that staff have used to try to look at, you know, changing out different polymers, doing some different strategies on the sequencing of when you back flush your clarifiers versus your filtration, other things. I will note that I really want to emphasize that, you know, our treatment staff take this so seriously that I have heard they were worried, you know, they were worried they might get fired if anything exceeded this level. And, you know, to me, contrarily, I think they're doing a massively hard job under a tremendous amount of pressure and doing as best, you know, the best they can. And they recognized it and, you know, made sure people were aware at higher levels of the organization, and we could, you know, work on resources and anything else we could do. So our goal would be to get through this with nothing noticed by the customer and no water quality violation on our record. And I think we'll see. We might have the one at Schmidt, but I think they've done an amazing job when you consider what those influent levels were. And they were bouncing around quite a bit. So I just want to acknowledge that. Our supervisor over that area was out of the country on vacation and flew home. Just barely got out of Puerto Rico ahead of the hurricane. That was Rafael. Fingers crossed. And then I think looking ahead, we're thinking about the winter and how much material is still up there. And we're initiating some communication with DWR about, is there anything we can do proactively on that flank of the lake to perhaps mitigate more flow, debris flow coming down, or at least reduce the slugs of it coming down with some kind of erosion control measures or that kind of thing. So that's a discussion we're getting started, and probably a good one to file away for future fires is, do we need a more proactive approach on that than operating from the point of input to the plant? We may need to start thinking about operating from the watershed basis at Castaic, and how do we partner with DWR, who owns that facility, to figure out appropriate strategies there. These are relatively rare events, you know, 10 years apart in this case, 11 years apart. But again, in that kind of world of trends, will we have more frequent burns? Will we have more intense storms, you know, early in the season, which we've seen the last couple of years? And does that change what our strategy should be from that standpoint? So that's it. I wanted to provide that update, and I'm sure there'll be some Q&A, and happy to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. April, any public comments?
There is not.
Okay. Directors, any questions, comments? Director Cooper?
Matt, are you guys coordinating with Metropolitan? Because Metropolitan has the same issues, and they can really help you with chemical dosages of what they're doing, and then also what can be done, because they're going to be as afraid of this winter as you are. And it may be just trying to get more water back into the lake is going to help that.
Yeah, I think there has been some coordination, and we're trying to kind of enhance that. What we've heard is they're certainly aware of the turbidity, and I think operationally they had some additional flexibility that we did not have. But also, I believe, and you would know this for sure, I think I had heard that their filtration plants have sedimentation ahead of the clarifiers, which really helps on turbidity spikes because it can help even those out a bit. So I'm not sure that they had quite the same turbidity levels actually hitting the clarifiers by the time it went through sedimentation. It'd be an interesting question to try to find that out. And I agree, they certainly have a very robust and capable water quality staff, and I'm sure they're willing to help. And we've talked about trying to kind of, this is one of those incidents too where you realize as you have change out in your long-term operators and staff, one of the things that can go with them is those relationships. And so it's a great insight to refresh those extra outside the agency relationships, so that when events like this come along, there's a ready contact there.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. Director Armitage.
Thank you. I just want to say that I very much appreciate the transparency of you sharing this, the transparency from the staff to reporting it to management, the transparency of management reporting it to you, and then you to us. So, and thank you to all the staff for working as hard as you have shared with us that they've been working on it. It saddens me to hear that Mr. Polito is the one who came back from vacation. Yeah, it saddens me to hear that he had to cut his vacation short to come back and address it. And it also saddens me to hear that staff was worried about their jobs, especially if they were being transparent and communicating this and doing their best to address the issue. So
I may be overshared on that, but okay. I think when you're in that stress situation, you probably vocalize a lot of things. And I to my knowledge, they've done nothing wrong at all. And they've done everything we would expect, which is to do their best to try to address the situation. So, I just felt it was important to sort of be on record that with what I know now, there's nothing like that on the table. And I think there's a difference between that kind of issue or, we can certainly be open to learning lessons or getting insights on improvement that isn't necessarily job performance. It's more organizational, processes and capability. And I've heard nothing that would indicate there was any kind of deficiency in performance. So,
okay. Well, thank you to all.
Director Plumbeck.
I missed what creek it was going into. I think you said that.
Yeah, it's the branch of the, I guess it's the river that goes past just over the hill here on Newhall Ranch Road. So it goes out through that little ravine on the backside of Central Park, and then down past the housing development. Is it River something? I think Rochelle lives there, right?
River Village,
and into the wash there.
Yeah, and I would like to reiterate also concern over staff worrying about their jobs when they're being transparent, because it's absolutely important that everybody tells everybody what's happening. So thank you for making sure that they feel that they can do that and that issues can get straightened out rather than, I think when people worry about their jobs, then things don't get reported that should be reported. So it's good that you gave them confidence that they can do that. Thank you.
Director Cooper. TV microphone, your microphone.
Being an ex-operator and I was a grade 5 operator for a number of years, they're concerned about their licensing. And that's what they're really, and without licensing, they don't have a job. And if they make the wrong decisions and and don't report it as it needs to be reported or shut the plant down as needs to be there. It's their obligation to do when they've exceeded things, then their licensing is at stake. And that's what they're concerned about. I know they're not concerned about the agency. They're concerned about their licensing and then what that means for them. So, yeah. And the health department can be difficult with some of that.
Thank you, Dr. Cooper. Same kind of applies in my, you know, private industry. Licenses are very important. Mr. Stone, I imagine that we have a culture here that things can be reported to their immediate supervisors or even above. Is that correct?
That is definitely the culture we are trying to perpetuate, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that can be done in order to make sure that licenses are not lost, either through more training or I mean, I know that we don't control the license. External agencies do.
I think in the larger sense, one of the things we want to do is not lose the immediacy of this experience in sitting down with everybody involved for kind of a review of everything that we did, and were there tools that we should have had or could have had that would have made things a little bit easier, or outside resources. I know that we did call on some outside resources to try to get other ideas and help our operators, you know, maybe with, hey, there's another polymer that you might try in this situation, things like that. But I think that's really the focus I would suggest, is let's learn as much as we can from what we just went through. It's not quite over yet. The turbidities are still, 20 to 30 out there. So assuming we can kind of get through this, we don't have any new storms on the horizon. We do have increased demand coming this weekend. So we are working to try to make sure we're in position, meet that demand with the system that we have. I'm open to looking at everything, including, do we have the right number of personnel? Should we have more support personnel? Would that have helped at all? I don't know until we kind of go back and kind of walk through. Are there any deferred projects that would have been of help, from that standpoint? Do we need a wash water overflow basin instead of Lake Sagehorn? Do we need something a little more formal than Lake Sagehorn? We're able to operate within the regulations, and so it works. And the overflow works when we're talking about, back flush water. It's not, toxic. It's just basically raw water, or partially treated water. There's no chlorine in it, so from that standpoint, it's fairly benign. It's basically the same water that's in Castaic Lake. But, I think those are all kind of questions that we should explore, and hopefully we can come back. And if there's anything different, I think also that watershed piece, do we need some kind of watershed response plan after a fire in the tributary area to Castaic Lake? We've had other fires up there and we haven't seen this kind of spike. I think part of it is the low levels. I think part of it is this particular fire burned a long chunk of that flank all the way down to the water. And so, that might have been a good one for turning hindsight into foresight, would be trying to figure out how do you assess that? And, maybe looking at other agencies' experience who deal with raw water quality and fires in their watersheds as well, to see what they have to offer in terms of experience that we could implement here.
Thank you for that. And speaking about turbidity, there's other parameters that kind of come along with high turbidity, such as maybe pH issues and PAH when you're dealing with ash. Do we have any exceedances in those aspects?
No.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions, comments? Dr. Bonstein.
I just wanted to thank you and staff. I love the forward thinking and that we're looking already to the future and what it might hold. And, you know, I'm just very thankful for everybody for working so hard to make sure that we have the water that we need. So, you know, thank you.
Well, I'm a very small, very, very, very small part of that. I'm, you know, just, we were talking about whether to do an email update or an in-person report. And given the relatively short meeting, we're now getting to 7:45, but, you know, and Mike, we kind of had our arms around enough to give a comprehensive enough report tonight that Mike did a lot of the work in pulling this together with his staff, and I'm just the, you know, the news reader. So,
well, I would say that that has to do with culture and the culture that the, you know, the agency is perpetuating. So, you know, it's all part of the same thing.
Director Cooper.
You know, I went through a number of these incidents when I was operating the Jensen plant. My suggestions, well, of course, the health department always wants you to build a plant where you have the ability to filter the waste. Well, it's pretty hard to build a, like Jensen was, 750 million gallon a day plant, and filtered waste is a lot of water. So you really can't do that. But sample. When something goes wrong, is boy, start sampling, because that's the one thing the health department looks for, is did you do a bunch of extra sampling so we can see what it was doing. And that helps get them off of your back when you do that.
Thanks. That's good. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Stone, I think I speak for all directors and all ratepayers, and we appreciate the transparency and the quick response by you, your staff, and your team. So thank you. Thank you for that. I guess we have one more question. Director Planbeck.
I just wanted to say that for helping with this ash not going in, it might be, I don't know that this would be possible for the fire department, but perhaps if they would, they probably didn't try to protect the wild area down to the lake because they didn't feel that it was something that the fire was going to stop there anyway, so they didn't need to do that. But if there's something that maybe a discussion with them could be related about this problem, and if they could even leave a strip somehow when they're watering things down with all those helicopters of vegetation, that might help stop some of the turbidity going into the, some of the ash going into the lake. And I don't know if that would be a priority for them, but we've talked before about, you know, explaining to the fire department what areas are vital and, you know, trying to coordinate with them. And this might be, I mean, that was pretty major issue over the weekend. So it might be good to explain it to them and see if there's any way that they could work out protecting some of the river, the lake bank.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And it's always going to be contextual in every fire,
yeah,
you know, because mm-hmm. if they're scrambling with resources to protect structures, the answer is probably going to be, we'd love to, but we can't. And the lake is a natural, they look at it as a right. natural fire break. So,
but on the other hand, they're not aware at all of this problem.
Yeah. So. No, I think that's a good point. I do. It might change. I was thinking about whether I'd really want them to dump, you know, the pink stuff
along there. I think that's got PFAS in it.
So
I just get so upset every time I see them dumping the pink stuff.
But yeah, I think there's, you know, hopefully this is a start of a conversation with Matt and DWR and could include fire, you know, fire protection officials as well. You know, how do we manage that issue when it happens? And certainly right after it burns too, there's a window there between when it burns, and we didn't have much time between when it burned and when we got the rains, but that isn't always the case. Sometimes it might burn in September and we don't get the first big rain until November, and there might be time to get some erosion control, you know, those
what do they look like, kind of straw jelly rolls or whatever that they put out there. That,
right. And those could have maybe.
Of course, I always think of pastry, you know. So. Okay. Thank you.
Does that conclude your question?
Yeah.
Come back. Any other questions or comments from directors? Director Peterson.
I'm really happy that Matt shared this with us tonight. My experience here at this plant in 2005 had a similar event with the rains that we had, and that was relentless for the whole month, it seems like. And we had a lot of turbidity issues then with the lake, and because of landslides that happened in the lake at the time. So it is because it is a filtration plant, we do have extra challenges with it when those kind of events happen. So I'm glad that Matt is on top of it with the staff and working towards solutions for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Pearson. Any other questions or comments? Just a side note, Mr. Stone, if you're approaching the fire department regarding this, I would also encourage to approach LA County Parks and Rec since they operate the lake. Okay, moving on to item 10, committee recap reports for informational purposes only. There's one report in your packet. April, are there any public comments?
There is not.
Any comments or questions from directors? Okay. Moving on to item 11, President's Report, with President Martin out of town. I'll go ahead and go over it. We have the following meetings. Outside the agency events, we have the City of Santa Clarita State of the City on October 27th at Canyon Country Community Center. Via Bash on November 4th at the Hyatt Regency, Valencia, and the Aqua 2022 Fall Conference in Indian Wells from November 29th to December 1st. Our upcoming board meetings, so we have a special board meeting on September 30th. We have a regular board meeting on October 4th. We have upcoming committee meetings for the month of October at Summit Circle, and those are one on October 6th, the Engineering and Operations Committee meeting, October 12th, the Water Resources and Watershed Committee meeting, October 20th, Public Outreach and Legislation Committee meeting, and the upcoming committee meetings for the month of October held at Rio Vista at this boardroom is the one on October 24th, a rescheduled Finance and Administration Committee meeting. Those lists will be sent by April to all of you directors so that you have them by email. April, are there any public comments?
There is not.
Directors, any questions, comments on President's Report? Seeing none, we can move to item 12, AB 1, 2, 3, 4 reports. There were three reports included in your packet and two that were posted to the website and emailed. Does anyone have any additional AB 1234 reports? Director Bunstein?
Well, thank you. Yesterday, I attended with several other directors an excellent Region 8 Aqua presentation. It was at the Burbank Water and Power. There, I was like, it was a BWP. Forgot what the W water, which is what we do. I know. It was actually a really, really good event. I was really happy to be there. I'm sure everybody else is going to talk about it, but we stayed behind a little bit, and Director Armitage and I got a behind the scenes full tour of the facility there. It was really, really neat. We got the go in the little questionable elevator on the side there, all the way up with our hard hats and everything. So that was a really special experience. I'm very thankful to that. Aside of that, I was really excited to hear all the updates from Aqua on the legislation that they were tracking. And they had a great, Mr. Jeff Keitlinger. I know, I was like, I keep on saying Nightlinger, but dyslexia. But he stood there for so long. He that was an excellent presentation. I really thought it was a great, great presentation. He talked about adaptations versus mitigations, which I think is an excellent way to look at the future and the challenges that are ahead of us. And then the panel. Wow, that was a great panel for communication. There was a lot of cool ideas, a lot of great different ways that people are doing outreach. And I really, really appreciated it. And so thank you.
Thank you, Director Bonstein. Director Kelly.
Yeah, I attended three of the Aqua ACE subcommittees meetings. In case people don't remember what the ACE stands for, is they're looking at Aqua Certificate of Excellence they're trying to establish. The purpose of this meeting is to come up with a scoring platform to be able to score people to qualify for the Certificate of Excellence. And so had a meeting on August 9th. I believe I reported on it, but just in case, August 9th, I had another one on August 30th, and then one on September 7th. There should be one more at the end of this month, and then it'll go to the Aqua Board to see when they want to implement it. And this is a program that's in conjunction with CSDA. CSDA already has a program, and they're supporting Aqua establishing their program. So, and everything's been set up on a point system from how many meetings you go to attending your Aqua programs, to sending in letters of support and things of these nature. So all of these end up acquiring points. And they'll be handing out a certificate of excellence probably sometime in early 23 at the Aqua Conference.
That's Director Kelly, was those virtual for record?
Say it again.
Was those virtual, those meetings?
They were all virtual, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Director Kelly. Let's start with Director Cooper.
I had a question about what you just reported on, Director Kelly. The Certificate of Excellence, are those for agencies or are those for individual Aqua members?
We're establishing them for individuals.
Okay.
And there's been communication about whether to establish something on an agency basis. But as of right now, it's for individual.
Okay. Director Cooper?
Two events. On the 9th, I attended the Santa Clarita Valley Economic Development Program, very good program. And on the 19th, yesterday, I also attended the Aqua Region 8 program. I thought it came off very well. I was very, very pleased with it. There was one of the items on there that the City of Long Beach was part of the panel. And you know how we give out bottled water at events. Well, they put together what they call their quench buggy. And they have this little cart looking thing that has a chiller, and they can give out cold water, paper cups at events instead of having to go to bottled water. So it was I'd like us to take a look and see if we can maybe do something like that for our events that we like to participate in, but it was a very interesting program.
Thank you, Director Cooper. Director Colling.
So I too attended the September 9th Economic Outlook, and then last Thursday I attended the Ventura County Association of Water Agencies event. The highlight of that was talking to Mauricio Guardado afterward for quite some time. So his getting updates on his views was very useful to me. Thanks.
Thank you, Director Colley. Director Armitage.
Thank you. So yes, as Director Bronstein mentioned, I was also one of the attendees yesterday's Region 8 Aqua meeting. I too thought it was excellent. I enjoyed the keynote speaker, but I also enjoyed the panel that Director Cooper mentioned. A lot of great innovative strategies that are happening out there in the communication world for different water agencies, although I do think we have a state-of-the-art team here as well, led by our Kathy Martin. So, but I still think it was good to kind of hear and also see that a lot of strategies that other agencies are doing, we're kind of thinking of as well, or if not doing ourselves. So it was nice to get that affirmation, right? And yes, I will say that the bonus tour that we received was really cool. We got to see their like state-of-the-art power plant, got the full tour. And although I was very sad to discover that I don't look as good as I thought in a hard hat and safety goggles. But it was very fun. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Armitage. Director Plamberg. Yeah,
I attended the Economic Outlook on September 9th and the event yesterday, and I'm going to be submitting written reports on both. So they're coming April. But I do want to applaud the Region 8 team. That was a really good program yesterday. And I think it was very fun, especially for myself, to be sitting at the table with Kathy Martin and like smiling about these things. And maybe we're going to see them, some of them here soon if we haven't already. I don't know what she's got cooked up, but and the quench buggy, she and, you know, I've been talking about not having bottled water for a long time, and we got the one, I don't know, apparatus to serve water that's not in a bottle, but it needs a hookup. So I've made suggestions to her for quite some time over other things we could do, but maybe the quench buggy is the answer. Who knows? We'll see. So that would be good. I mean, it's really important to get away from bottled water. That's such a bad example. But anyway, they did all these incredible, the reason they were bringing all of this up is they are looking at the ways to address climate change by reducing water usage. So they're trying to encourage the public, as we do, to encourage to reduce their water. And they're doing it. One of the things that I really love that I like to share with the whole board is they hired the Lindas as Facebook influencers which is a girl band to dance around and sing about reducing water. It was just great. But anyway, so a great event, and congratulations, Mr. Cooper. That was quite a good thing that Region 8 put together.
Appreciate that. That's, I enjoyed putting together.
Thank you, Director Planback. Dr. Armitage, you have a question?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that another cool thing that they shared with us there was that Burbank Water and Power is trying to create an eco campus out of their facilities. And so one of the things they have is like a living green roof, right, where they use plants on the roof as part of the covering material to keep the building cooler. So they were showing that off. And then they have solar carports. And then they have a centennial garden where they used old materials from the power plant and turned it into a really pretty setting where they have vining plants kind of going up these old power plant structures. And in it, they have a memorial garden or a memorial tree that they mentioned that every employee that worked there and has since passed away, they add to their memorial plaque, which I thought was kind of a cool thing too. So just wanted to throw that out. Thank you.
Yeah, and I forgot just one more in relation to the solar panels, because they're trying to become, Burbank Water and Power mentioned that they were trying to become carbon neutral by 2040. So they put in all of this carport covering, but then realized it wasn't enough. And they mentioned a really innovative project to cover school carports or other facility public agency carports and then get the energy that's generated from those carports. And I thought that was pretty, I think a lot of our school districts are already generating solar power with covered carports, but it might be something to look into. I mean, maybe we could partner with one of the bonds or something that has a flat roof. We have pretty good solar array out there, but it was a good idea. I thought that should get shared.
Thank you for those comments, Director Armitage and Director Planbeck.
I was just going to say that clearly we enjoyed ourselves. So we keep on thinking, and then.
Yeah, absolutely. So Director Cooper, you and President of Aqua Region 8 have done a phenomenal job. That was a good location to host the meeting. I know we had to postpone it, and good content too. So regarding my events, I also have attended the Fall Economic Outlook Forecast hosted by Santa Clara Valley Economic Development Corporation on September 9th. And like Director Siev, I've also attended the Aqua Region 8 program. And I too agree with Director Bronstein that mitigation might not be the case. We do have to adapt. And although conservation measures are important, they might not do the trick in the future. So an emphasis was put on, moving forward with the Sites Reservoir and the Delta Conveyance Project. I spoke with a few GMs there, and they've all expressed an interest in having those projects done, even though some of them are downstream of MET. Okay. April, are there any public comments?
No, there is not.
Okay. We're moving to item 13, director requests for future agenda items. I know that Director Goodside had two requests, one that was in the packet and the other that was posted email today. Director Goodside, would you like to elaborate on your request?
I didn't really have anything to elaborate on. I know April, it's new policy to write it out so they understand what we're talking about. So I have nothing further, really.
Okay. Just a concern with PFAS liability for water utilities. Okay. It's based on EPA, right?
Yeah, that one. Yeah, my comment was shorter on that. But if they make it a named hazardous substance, generally that it brings a lot of reporting and then potential liability and what happens to the water agencies if we're moving that water around. That would be goal, and I understand that we are working on that. And when we have some information, I thought an update would be good.
Okay. Thank you, Director Goodside. As a reminder to all directors, future agenda items are something that the whole board should receive information on or would benefit both the public and the board at a regular meeting. An informational item is something that you would like further information on as a director that can be requested or received from staff. So are there any future agenda items from any of the directors at this time? There's one from Director Colley. Go ahead, Director Colley.
Actually, two things. Last night, the committee discussed the flexible workplace policy. We had a great one-year update. We learned that there are managers that are in favor of expansion of the program. Apparently it's working very, very well. So just not to lose the possibility of expanding that, I'd like to put that in as a future agenda item. Probably would need to start at the committee again. And then the other thought that I had is reviewing our bill pay options. I don't think that's something that we have done as the new agency yet. I can't recall having done it and actually making decisions on things like who would pay the credit card fees and that sort of thing. So I'd like to have that again. That would probably start at the F&A committee. So an overview of the bill pay options and potential actions to make adjustments.
Okay, thank you, Director Colley. Your two items are noted. Any other ones? Director Kelly.
Finance Committee will be bringing a report on the workforce program to, I believe it's the first meeting in October, along with its recommendations from the rest of the committee members. So just so you're aware of that.
Thank you, Director Kelly. Any other requests for future agenda items? Seeing none, we'll move to item 14, adjournment. Meeting's adjourned.